Okay, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the committee meeting for estimates for the Department of Digital Government and Service NL. Before we begin, I just want to remind you that prior to answering any questions, I'd like for you to identify yourself. That would make it easier for the media center to pick up where you're sitting. And just want to remind you that, when you're out and about around the chamber, just to ensure that you wear your mask. So we have 3 hours for this section, for this lot of estimates, and that will take us up, I guess, to 9 o'clock. So to ensure that you get your questions asked and your answers, I suggest that you keep your preamble shorter. So now I will start with the introductions, beginning with the minister, and your staff can introduce themselves as well.
Hi, Sarah Studley, Minister of Digital Government and Service NL and MHA for the Economic Powerhouse District of Mount Zion.
Hello, I'm Dave Heffernan, Deputy Minister for Digital Government and Service NL.
Alan Duty, Assistant Deputy Minister for Digital Government and Services Branch of Digital Government.
Hi, Scott Jones, Assistant Deputy Minister of Regulatory Affairs Branch, Digital Government Service NL.
I'm Melanie O'Neill, Director of Communications for Digital Government and Service NL.
Angelica Hill, Executive Assistant to the Minister.
Bonnie Steele, Departmental Controller.
We'll now take it over to the committee members to introduce themselves.
I'm Kevin Parsons, MHA for the beautiful district of Cape St. Francis.
I'm Jordan Brown, the MHA for the very snow-clad district of Labrador West.
I'm Jerry Byrne, member of the Legislative Assembly for the beautiful and historic district of Corner Brook.
Derek Bennett, MHA for the beautiful, historic, and scenic district of Lewisburg-Torngate.
That's a lot of pressure. Andrew Parsons, MHA for the plain old district of Virgil Boyle.
Brian Warr, MHA for the mining capital of Newfoundland, Labrador, Beaver, Green Bay.
Thank you. I'll now pass it over to the minister for some opening remarks.
What about the researchers? Did they introduce themselves?
The research staff. Okay. And the research staff to be introduced as well.
Stephen Kent, researcher for the NDP caucus.
Lori Bonia, the official opposition office.
Now I'll pass it over to the minister for her opening remarks.
Thank you. Good evening. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. This is my first estimates as Minister and Minister of Digital Government and Service NL. I'm very pleased to be here this evening. I'd like to take the opportunity to thank all the opposition and my colleagues for joining us also this evening. And I'd like to thank the staff, Digital Government and Service NL, for their preparation for today's session, and all the staff who work behind the scenes. Now, I don't have Alexander with me, but he's in the caucus room with my husband, so if he needs me, I might have to bring him in and feed him, but we'll see. Hopefully, it'll be as least disruptive as possible. So before we get started, I just want to highlight a few points regarding our estimates. So Digital Government and Service NL has a net budget of over $24 million. We do bring in a lot of revenue, however. So in addition to the over $10 million in revenue identified in the estimates, we also bring in over $131 million in general revenue, which does not show up on the department estimates, but shows up in general revenue. So we certainly make a lot more than what we spend as a department, which I'm very pleased of. In 2020 and 2021, Digital Government and Service NL will generate this revenue through issuing fees, registry of deeds, and most specifically transactions at Motor Registration Division. My department's responsible for the majority of licensing, inspections, and regulatory functions within government, and is the primary access point for people who need those services. And every day I'm learning, when I first got the portfolio, every day I'd learn about a new thing that Digital Government and Service NL was responsible for, and the former deputy minister referred to it as the lint trap. of the provincial government. So when in doubt, it's Digital Government and Service NL. So these range from electrical inspections to restaurant inspections to the production of vital statistics records and the registration of deeds. Within Motor Registration Division, the department completes more than a million transactions per year. During the current public health emergency, there has been a significant uptake in the use of government's online services, as you've heard me talk about before. More than 98% of the vehicle renewals have been conducted online, compared to 75% during the same period in 2019. We've had a significant uptake in the number of driver's license renewals conducted online, with over 92% of drivers renewing online, an increase of 47% over last year. We also are in charge of occupational health and safety, which is responsible for health and safety inspections and enforcement programs. The Occupational Health and Safety Division establishes through legislation the codes, standards, and practices for safe and healthy working conditions. The costs associated with occupational health and safety are recovered from Workplace NL, so there's offsetting revenue for all related expenditures, and those come from fees that employers pay Workplace NL. Additionally, Vital Statistics entered into an agreement with the federal government to pilot an electronic death notification project. This is an 18-month project costing $400,000 in 2020 and 2021 and $235,000 in 2021-2022. The project is 100% funded by the federal government, with full funding received upfront in 2019-2020. The budget, as if you've attended some estimates already, I'm sure you're aware of this, but the budget also includes a net amount of $846,000 for a 27th pay period in 2020-2021. These additional salary expenses total over $1 million, less a salary recovery of $184,200 for the Occupational Health and Safety Division. We also have a two-year attrition target of $164,600, which is $82,500 in 2020-2021, $82,100 in 2021-2022, and by 2021-22, which is equivalent to three PCNs. The department has submitted a plan to achieve this target, and we're confident in doing so. So hopefully, the members tonight will have witnessed firsthand at some point the hard work of at least one of the divisions of Digital Government and Service NL. I'm sure we can all appreciate the commitment of staff to serving people across the province. We particularly saw this during, you know, COVID-19. I know there have been some hiccups, but, you know, staff in Motor Vehicle Registration or Motor Registration Division had to completely change the way that they worked and delivered services, within a very short period of time. We're still working at some of the kinks, but it should all be resolved soon. And I'd also like to thank, you know, the Queen's Printer for the staff there who stayed up all night printing the budget documents for us as they do every year. And also I'd like to highlight the Office of French Services, which is also part of this department and provides French language training and translation services to government. And this office also provides support to me as the minister responsible for Francophone affairs. And so we have a translation line item, which we'll get to. And so the more I speak in French, the more that line item goes up, the more translation we need. So we'll see how that goes this year. In addition, through the Office of the Queen's Printer, the department provides printing services for the provincial government, the general public, and I've also learned Eastern Health. So a huge printing is undertaken by the Queen's Printer. I also want to make sure we make the most of our time this evening, so I will turn things back over to the chair and the committee so we can get started. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Chair? Okay, we'll move along now and ask the clerk to call the subject.
For the estimates of Digital Government and Service Newfoundland and Labrador, 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 inclusive.
Okay. Thank you very much, Minister. It's indeed a pleasure to be here this evening, and it's so nice to see all the cabinet ministers on this committee. It's the first time I've ever been to one of these where had all cabinet ministers behind me, so pay attention. Pay attention to what I have to ask. You might learn something. Anyway, it's nice to have them all here this evening. Nice to see everybody here. Minister, before I start, I had the opportunity to be the critic for Service NL for 4 years, and I always said that Service NL got you from the time you're born to the time you die and everything else in between. So it's a very interesting department, and I'm sure the general public don't realise the amount of things that go through the department for inspections and birth certificates and death certificates and everything else that goes in between. I'll start off, First Minister, by asking you for if you could provide a copy of your briefing book when we're finished.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. I know in August that the department was realigned. Can you explain some of the changes that occurred?
Sure, thank you very much. So I'll jump in, but team, feel free to elaborate. So obviously we have a new name, Department of Digital Government and Service NL. So the deputy minister's responsibilities have been slightly realigned, so I'll let them speak to that. But overall, we haven't made significant changes to the department. We haven't moved any of the budget things around. I'll pass it over. Sure, Dave.
Okay. Sure, Dave Heffernan. So as the minister mentioned, I have a dual role now. So as Deputy Minister for Digital Government and Service, and now I also have the pleasure of maintaining my old role, which was Chief Information Officer as well. So the intention behind that is to align the IT functions, I guess, with the, which also had the digital government portfolio prior to the changes in August, and which was heavily invested in technology. So technology is the main driver for the digital government initiative, and it made sense to align those. In terms of the activities and where they are, the digital team is still part of OCIO, but we're looking at now what makes more sense to come over. Because it's so IT-focused at the moment, there are aspects of digital government that the Digital Government Service NL department will do, but there are still aspects from an IT perspective that are in the office of the CIO, and so we're still teasing out what needs to be done in terms of bringing those together.
Okay. All right. I know you mentioned, Minister, about your attrition plan, how you followed. So has there been any changes from this year to last year? Last year to this year?
From the attrition plan?
Attrition plan, yeah.
I believe we're on target for the plan, but I don't know if anyone else wants to.
Bonnie Steele. Yes, the attrition plan for last fiscal was met, and there's a new target in place for this fiscal and next, and the department has submitted their plan earlier this summer to meet that requirement.
Could you give me the current list of the number of employees in the department and break them down as permanent, seasonal, temporary, and contractual?
Dave Heffernan. So total number of employees is 493. Contractual positions are 5. Permanent, 427. Seasonal, 3. Temporary, 40. Opening doors positions, 11. And the Credit Union Deposit Guarantee Corp is 7. Filled are 374 and vacant are 101.
How many retirements have occurred in the department and were these positions filled?
Dave Heffernan. There were 15 retirements in 2020, or I think that's for 2021. I'll have to ask our controller to confirm that. And I don't know how many of those were actually filled.
Bonnie Steele. The retirements were 15. That was at the end of 1920. I don't have the number of the ones that were filled, but we can provide that.
Okay. Were there any layoffs that occurred in the department last year or any new hires in the past year?
Dave Heffernan. There were no layoffs. There were 6 new hires. There were 18 resignations. 12 end of employment, so I guess people that decided to leave the organization, but no layouts.
Okay. How many vacancies are now in the department that are not filled?
101.
Pardon?
Sorry, Dave Heffernan, 101 vacancies.
Wow. Have there been any positions that have been eliminated?
Dave Heffernan, no.
The impact of COVID department to the department, and how has this impact the departmental spending and your budget?
Dave
Thank you. Sarah Stoodley. So I would say that COVID had a significant impact on our department, although the teams have done an incredible job of, I guess, not letting the work stop. Everything seemed to have continued. I'll let Alan elaborate, but I guess one of the significant, most significant, obviously, because we're customer-facing or resident-facing, so the way that we interacted with the general public completely changed, you know, in a very short period of time. So in motor registration division, obviously we previously had a kind of a walk-in model, and we had to completely change that, which we're, you know, still working on fine-tuning. You know, obviously with social distancing, people working from home, a lot of the field inspectors worked from home and not from the office. I understand there were 8 employees. Of all of our staff, only 8 were not able to work throughout the whole COVID-19. So I don't know if I can pass it over to the team to elaborate on some of that or anything else that we should mention.
Alan Duty. So during COVID, as the minister had stated, we continued operations. Although the only operations that we stopped from an in-person service perspective were those, we did stop in-person service for things like coming to get your photograph taken, or if you had to actually come in and provide material, like replace your license plate. Those are the types of service that we didn't conduct initially during COVID. The staff continued to work. We were using other means such as email, drop boxes, and things of that nature in our offices to allow for citizens to drop off their material for processing. So staff continued to work throughout. Driver examinations was one other service that we ceased because the driver examiner sits in the car with the member of the public. So that's how we started initially. And our periodic inspections on the regulatory side, we also had stopped them, and we're responding more to COVID-related types of inspections related to environmental health and also on occupational health and safety. During that time frame throughout, as you can map the path through COVID, from an occupational health and safety perspective, we worked with every industry as they came back online. It started first with the construction industry, and we were working with stakeholders such as Workplace NL and with those industry groups to ensure that they were able to operate safely. As we started to move back through the different levels of as set by the Chief Medical Officer of Health, we also started to reintroduce other services. So as the Minister said, we went back to in-person services by appointment into the offices, and that was for both the safety of our staff, but also the safety of the public to ensure that how people came to the office, it was controlled. We reintroduced periodic inspections. Back to your original questions about impact on budget, because originally some of our, where we had stopped periodic inspections, you know, we had some savings on our transportation costs and things of that nature because we weren't out in full force at the time. But now we've resumed back to normal operations. So we did see some savings from transportation communications perspective in relation to that.
Okay. Did your department receive any money from the COVID fund?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
No.
Did your department receive any money from the contingency fund? No?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay. I see now you only got 38 seconds left when you start to the next one, but I'll let Jordan go if you want to.
Mr. Brown.
Thank you. I guess we'll start. Section 1.2.01, executive support. We noticed a significant increase in salaries in that section compared to the actuals. I know we're dealing with the extra pay period, but this seems significantly more than the extra pay period. Is there any reasoning for that?
Dave Heffernan. So we're on 1.2.01?
1.2.01, executive support.
Okay, so the increase there was a reflection of the 27th pay period and regular step increases.
Okay.
For a total of $129,400.
Okay, there's a step increase there too. Okay, perfect, thank you. A notice in employee benefits in the same section, it's double. What's the reasoning for that?
So So there was an increased cost, sorry, Dave Heffernan. There was an increased cost there for workers' health and safety, or I guess workplace NL charges. So, and there was an overage there of a one-time lump sum payment that was needed to be made. $49,000, I believe.
Yeah. Under revenue there for that, what is the source of this revenue here under executive support?
Dave Heffernan. Revenue here is tied to occupational health and safety. So all the occupational health and safety costs are fully recovered from Workplace NL, and they're all booked in this activity.
Okay. Section 1.2.02, French language services. I know it was part of the mandate to build government capacity in the French language services, but we noticed that there is, you know, there doesn't seem to be any increasing costs or anything like that. So is this project complete, or is it just a very minute ongoing thing?
It's a core program of the department. So there are four staff, I believe, that are dedicated to translation services, and then they deal with contract resources and the federal government when they need additional resources for that. But there's no expansion of the team. It's a core team that's
okay,
there.
Okay, so what it is it is. I know because I know it's a language used was to build this service. So we're looking at this as a very steady thing. So you don't see any building per se. I was just curious on if there was any increases to that.
Sure. So one of the things that I am hoping we can focus on, I'm planning to focus on, is looking at the online services and how we can have more online services in French, because it's certainly more cost effective. You know, if we build something in English, you can translate it and have it in French. So we're looking at, I'd say that's the area of biggest opportunity for expanding our French services is the online services area. Which wouldn't necessarily come in this budget area.
Yeah. I noticed other sources of revenue, there was a significant increase in revenue compared to what's budgeted. What was the increased revenue received?
Dave Heffernan. The revenue here, I think it was increased as a result of receiving a partial payment from 2018-19 in 2019-20. So I think the payments come out at a certain time of year, and in this case, it was received late and came into the new year funding.
Okay, so it's actually it's just recovered costs from a previous year.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, and so this the current the budgeted revenue here in this current one right now, that's the core funding from the federal government for French language services.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right, section 1.2.03, a minute of support. Is this a new subdivision within this government or within the department? Because there's nothing budgeted last year, but we're getting a new source of revenue and a new sources of there, yes.
So this is a result of the death notification project, which the minister referenced in her opening remarks. This is a project that's underway with the federal government, and they're fully funding the project, and a portion of that funding is coming this year. However, it's a capital project, so we didn't have an active capital account for this to go into. So this was an old account that was deactivated, I think, and Bonnie can speak to this better, but it was reactivated in order for us to put the federal funding into it for this project.
Okay. So yes, this is a new. So this is 100% funded federally? Okay.
Bonnie Steele. Yes, this is a new project. It's a two-year project, so part of the funding is expensed here this year and recovering the same for the revenue. And then next year, there will be another allocation of $80,000, $235,000 that'll flow through with the related revenue as well. After that, there you will see that the budget for the administrative support will go back to zero.
Okay, perfect. That's not all I have for this questions I have for this section. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Parsons, do you have more?
I just want to go back to one of the questions I asked you a little earlier about the vacancies positions. You said there was 101. Is there any intention to fill those positions?
I can't speak to all 101, but I think we're actively trying to fill a lot of those positions. I don't know the exact number offhand, but just the process of trying to fill positions can be difficult sometimes, so we don't get a chance to to fill all of them, and the department has a significant pressure on salaries. So a lot of the times we, even though we have the vacant positions, we need to manage the salary plan so that we don't go over on our salaries just because of the deficit in our salary.
Okay. All right. I'll have a question later on in the department that I'll probably answer. You probably have to answer a similar question to that. I just want to go to section 1101 and under transportation and communications. And I went through this the other night, last time I did the estimates with fisheries, and I was interested, very interested in this department because the current situation we find ourselves in, last year was budgeted, and this year the budget is a little higher, but we spent less. I'm wondering why we're a little bit higher this year.
Sorry, can I get you to confirm?
This section is transportation communications under section 1101 in the minister's office.
Oh, sorry.
Just want you to explain the line there for me.
So the increase of $1,100 there is just the anticipated increase for out-of-province travel for FPT meetings.
Yeah.
And of course, this was developed prior to COVID, so there was anticipation that there was going to be some extra travel. But
okay, so all these were done prior to COVID. Okay.
Yes, this was developed, I think, in November of last year.
Okay. Okay, I don't think you're going to send too many people.
Oh, sorry. Just to clarify, because I know my light wasn't on. Sorry. Okay. I said we don't plan on doing any extra travel now moving forward.
Okay. All right. Just a final question in this section. I want to go to section 1203 and purchase services. What's included in this? $320,000.
Dave Heffernan. So this $320,000 is the federal funding that's coming to the government of Newfoundland, to Digital Government Service NL, for the death notification, death registration project. It's a project to have automatic notification of death from funeral homes and hospitals and to make it simpler for families through a very difficult time in their life. The actual funding here is for an IT project that results in a capital asset that the department will own. And it's for establishing that electronic notification system.
Okay, thank you. I think that's it on this section.
Okay, we'll call the vote for this section. Shall 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 inclusive carry? All those in favor? All those against? The motion has been carried. I now ask the clerk to call the next subhead.
2.1.01 to 2.2.03 inclusive.
Okay. Will I continue? Okay. In section 2101, the current caseload, what is the current caseload for the residential tenancies?
I'll have to defer to my ADM of regulatory affairs, Scott Jones.
Scott Jones. To date, so in this year, the average caseload for residential tenancies is decreased compared to last year. For argument's sake, for September just gone, there was 76, and in preceding years, it averaged approximately 100. And there has been an overall decrease this year, likely due to COVID, but also as a result of the legislative amendment that allowed for an additional 30 days made earlier in the spring to allow for an extra 30 days notice for a tenant to have to leave, vacate a premise in response to COVID.
Okay. Under salaries, can you explain this? There's an increase there in the salaries?
So the increase in actuals there of $24,525 was a result of some temporary positions that needed to be extended to meet some of the demands.
Okay. And I guess the transportation communications is because it was budgeted last year. Okay. Purchase services, can you explain what's included here? And there's a variance of what was actually spent and what's budgeted?
Dave Heffernan. So purchase services, the variance here in actuals, is that the one you're asking?
Yeah.
So the variance in actuals here was a result of lower than anticipated training and development costs as a result of completion of an adjudication certification program by two of our residential tenancies adjudicators.
Okay, under revenue, what's included here?
Dave Heffernan. So the revenue here is from residential tenancies hearing fees.
Okay. Okay, section 2102. And again, there is a decrease in the salaries this year from what was budgeted last year by quite a bit. Can you explain what's happening here?
Sorry, Dave Heffernan. The decrease here was a result of several vacancies. We had two managers, two investigators, and two administrative staff in a policy position vacant at various times throughout the year.
So their budget for this year is not included? It's just that they're gone and...
No, we have their budget included for this year, but we know that we won't get them filled for the whole year, so we've got the budget adjusted to make sure that it accounts for not having them full-time for a 12-month period.
Okay. We'll go to purchase services again. Can you tell us what's included here and what a variance?
Dave Heffernan. So in purchase services here, a lot of that is equated to Moneris fees. And the variance from actuals was a result of lower than anticipated annual membership fees for our Canadian Securities Administration membership.
Okay. Under this section, the Funeral Act review, is this currently underway?
I'll have to defer to my ADM.
Scott Jones, the Embalmers and Funeral Act actually comes under Consumer Affairs, we are exploring, we haven't initiated a review yet, but we are exploring internally the steps to take to proceed with the review.
Okay. Is this the section also that has the locked-in pensions?
Pensions, that's under, sorry, Scott Jones, pensions are under the pension standards section.
Okay. Okay, let's go to section, the next one, section 2103 of pensions benefit standards. Okay, so is this where the pensions, okay, can I ask a question now? Can you update me on what might be happening? Is there any movement on this? Okay.
Sarah Studley. So the consultations have closed. We've received a package from Engage NL of all the feedback. I believe the teams are currently reviewing it, and we'll be making recommendations. But we in the last week or two, we just got the package from Engage NL, so we will be going through all the results now.
And when you say you're expecting to hear anything coming through, how long?
Potentially in the winter. We haven't seen the results yet, so it's probably too early to say.
Okay.
Sorry. We did have over 130 submissions in the consultation, so it was very popular.
Okay. Just looking at the salaries here with the budget, and actually there's a good bit of variance there of $118,000. Can you explain that?
Dave Heffernan. The variance here was the director responsible for this division was assigned to another position but continued to also perform in this division, so we didn't have to fill that position.
Okay. In section 2104, under registry of deeds there, what percentage of the registry of deeds digitalization is completed?
Scott Jones. So the deeds can be that are registered can be accessed back to as far as 1982 online. And we're still working through trying to continue with digitalization beyond that, earlier than that as well.
Okay. Again, on the salary line there, can you explain the steady decrease in salaries?
Dave Heffernan. So the decrease on, or the variance on actuals there was just a reflection of vacancies throughout the year. And for the budget for 2021, we're looking at, there are still some vacancies there in the division that are being recruited, but the budgeted salary amount reflects that. So it's just dropped down.
Okay. Purchase service and bus included here, and explain the variance, please.
Dave Hefferman. The variance here in actuals was a result of lower Moneris merchant fees, and there was a decrease there for March.
Okay. That's it for questions for me on this section.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry. All right. I think my colleague got most of the for that last session. All right. Under 2.2.03, printing and micrographic services, there was a increase in purchase services. What were they for?
Dave Heffernan. The increase here in the variance in actuals was a result of increased copier charges.
And I noticed that there's an increase going into estimates. Is that a reflection of the increased cost of the service?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's correct.
Vital statistics. Sorry, I'm going to go back to this one. 2.2.02. Same thing. Purchase services is estimating to be doubled in the coming budget. What's the reasoning for that?
Sorry, was that 2.201 or?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, sorry to make it all goes back.
01? Vital statistics?
Yeah, 01. Yeah, vital statistics registry.
Okay, sorry. What was your question again?
The doubling of the budget for purchase services.
So there's an $80,000 increase here, $80,500, which reflects current costs associated with the death registration project.
Okay, so this is a similar project. This is tied in with the project from the federal government?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
So there's an increase here of $80,500 for this particular area.
Okay. Under revenue for this, it was budgeted last year for 50 and 50 from the federal and provincial government, but we've seen a $716,000 there for this under provincial revenue, but we didn't see an increase in the federal. We've seen a decrease in federal. What's the reasoning behind all this?
Dave Heffernan. So the increase in actuals there was a result of an increase of $666,951. Which reflected the federal funding that came in for the joint death notification, death registration project, of $635,000 plus $31,950 there in revenue realized for records transferred as part of the national routing system, which is a way they share vital statistics information across the country.
Okay, and then under the provincial government, I guess we didn't get a lot of people, an uptick in people purchasing, I guess, records? Because I said under provincial was only 20,000 compared to budgeted for 50,000. Is that a reasoning that people are not purchasing service?
Dave Heffernan. So the lower amount there, the variance there is a result of lower demand for what's called express delivery of certificates from vital statistics. So there was a lower demand for getting something in a faster
All right, that makes sense. I noticed that there's an increase from the federal government budgeted. Is this still part of the death notification project?
Dave Heffernan, yes, that's correct. There's $80,000 there for 2020-21 as a result of the death registration project.
Okay. The Queen's Printer, I noticed that the revenue was significantly down than what was budgeted in the actuals. What was the reasoning for that?
Dave Heffernan, reduction in revenues here due to a greater reliance on digital and a noticeable decrease in products being purchased by the universities, so things like books and copies of legislation.
Okay.
Thank you. One thing I've learned in this program, I didn't realize people bought legislation, and that's the thing that people do, and universities buy pieces of legislation, and this is like the bookstore of the government.
Because everything we have, it usually says Queen's Printer on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fair assertion there. Perfect. Yep, that's all my questions for this section. Thank you.
You done? Okay, we'll call the vote for this particular session, section. So 2.1.01 to 2.2.03 inclusive carry. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? The motion has been carried. I ask the clerk now to call the next subhead.
3.1.01 to 3.4.02 inclusive.
Okay, motor registration. Okay. I know this summer there was a lot of, all you had to do was listen to open line, basically, and you hear a lot of complaints about the motor registration. But, you know, I know there were some glitches that were in there. Have they all been addressed?
Yeah, so we've, you know, we've learned through the uptake on online services that citizens need some assistance navigating that, and most of the issues that were we were hearing from citizens was able to access the telephone service. So the telephone service that was that's there now and has been in place is the software is very limiting and restrictive, and we are actually in the process of upgrading that and allocating more resources to help navigate, to help citizens navigate, so and ensure that they can get in. So from that complaint from citizens, that it's in process of being rectified. And as we originally, our big pressure point when we first returned to service was written testing for the youth who want to get their driver's license. And so we've been working through that that backlog, and we're now up to date on written testing. You can get an appointment in Mount Pearl for a written test tomorrow. But we're also working to put that service in a digital format, so people will be able to take that test online as well if they choose to. So we've been working through those issues as they come up, and we're dealing with every client complaint as it arises.
Okay, a lot of the complaints were due to. Appointments, getting the proper appointments in the system. Is that working properly now, too?
Yes, it is. So the appointment booking tool is working quite well. So again, related to that was back to that teleservice piece. So citizens who were having trouble navigating the booking tool, so they were reaching back into government through the teleservices network. And of course, that's where they were running into problems. But the booking tool is working perfectly. Originally, that was only in the Mount Pearl Center, and we've since rolled it out across the province. Okay. So citizens can use that, are using that tool in all 11 offices provincially.
Most of the complaints that I received as MHA, we get lots of calls and stuff like that, was to do with wait times. And you call, and it could be a month before you could get an appointment. Is that similar? Is it the way it is today? Is there? Do you have time frames now? What the wait times actually are?
Yes. So I didn't check it today, but so as early as the beginning of this week, you're about a 7-day wait to get into Mount Pearl. In most other offices across the province, it's within 1 or 2 days.
Okay.
Okay. I also received, I hate to tell you about all the complaints, I'm sure you heard them all before anyway, but I did receive some complaints about people that did access service and find that there was only like two booths open or three booths open. Is there a problem there with the amount of people we have working there to deploy? Is that the reason why the wait times were so high?
No, so as we had said earlier in the beginning, we were still providing services throughout COVID through other service channels that we didn't previously use. So email and things of that nature, we also had set up where people could go online and pay for like a vehicle transfer, but still had to send us in documents. And originally when we went back to in-person services, we still were trying to work through that the backlog of those of that service, the service that we had provided through COVID. And as a result, as we started to redistribute resources, we had taken some off other, so we had limited how many people had counter appointments initially. But now there's a daily in Mount Pearl, and it's mostly due to spacing. There's half of the wickets are open, right? So that's for the safety, that's to maintain social distancing requirements for staff and also for the public that are coming in.
Okay. One of the things I know we've asked lots of times about in the House, and always a suggestion when we come up to speak about anything when it comes to Service L, and L, it's about plate to owner. Just wondering where you're to with this, and will we be seeing this the plate to the owner system in place?
Yeah, so Alan Duty again. We are actively working with our Atlantic counterparts on potentially using a system that's in existence for them. We were working with them prior to COVID. That was moving quite well. But of course, with COVID, things got delayed. All of the, our counterparts in the Atlantic provinces had taken a different service philosophy than ours. Like they had, so they weren't providing a lot of services throughout the beginning of COVID, and they're now are trying to get their services back online. So although we haven't determined what type of solution we are going to use, we're still exploring our options, but it's we are actively pursuing a solution.
Because I think that's something that's been on the go for, as you know, a very long time. Under the highway enforcement officers, how many highway enforcement officers are there currently?
Yeah, so there's currently 32 highway enforcement officers.
Are there any vacancies?
Yes, there are 10 vacancies.
Are you planning to hire any more, or is it?
Yes. Recruiting is always ongoing. Highway enforcement officers, in particular, in rural communities, we struggle to find the right skill set, but we are actively recruiting.
Okay. I'm not sure now where to now, but I know that the way station, there's some issues there that was shut down for a while. Is everything up and normal? The one there on Foxtrap?
Foxtrap?
Yeah.
So there's normally, if the scale is some refurbishment takes place at those scales periodically from time to time, and this year I had a vehicle had run into a pole at the scale, so it was closed for safety reasons until okay. That had been rectified.
Okay, and everything's okay there now and working okay?
Everything's okay there, yes.
All right. Can you update us on the highway cameras and where are you proposed, where are they to?
Yeah, so Digital Government Service now, of course, responsible for the Highway Traffic Act, and we had passed legislation to enable the use of image capture systems. We are currently drafting regulations to allow them to be used. Digital Government Service NL wouldn't be responsible for the procurement or the deployment of those systems. They would fall to other entities, such as law enforcement agencies, Department of Education, for example, if they were going to install them on school buses, and transportation and infrastructure if they're going to deploy them in construction zones.
Okay. And outstanding fees for unlicensed, unregistered, and uninsured vehicles. Do you have any idea what the amount that currently exists for outstanding fines or fees are for unlicensed vehicles?
So from an outstanding fines perspective, I don't have that number. That's something that would be tracked by the Fines and Administration Division of Justice and Public Safety. And from an outstanding fees, you know, we would only be able to look at the difference between how many vehicles are registered year to year, and there's been no significant change in the amount of vehicles being registered annually.
Okay. No, last year there was planned for a pilot project to set up a system where people can contribute time and service in lieu of money ongoing. What's happened with this plan? Or did anything happen?
Yeah, Alan Duty. So again, that initiative actually was being led by the Department of Justice and Public Safety. So they would have to respond to that.
Okay. Also, there's an ATV review on the go. What can we expect? When can we expect to see results for their motorized vehicle legislation to be renewed?
Yeah, Alan Duty. We had commenced a review some time ago, and we originally were focused on just changing legislation to put make helmets mandatory for snowmobiles, because they're not. And during that, while that consultation was ongoing, we had received a report from the child death advocate, and they had asked for an extensive review of the legislation. So that has been completed, and consultations are done. There was extensive consultations done as well. So we are just moving that through the cabinet process now.
Okay. I got a question now that came up only last week. There was a news report that came out that the licensing and inspection of trailers. Can you explain, is that, I was wondering if it was all trailers, utility trailers, or is it just trailers that are, say, made homemade trailers? What's the?
Alan Duty. We have implemented new inspection criteria for motorcycles and for light trailers. So under the official inspection station manual, so we updated the manual to have criteria there. Those trailers and motorcycles are not, there's no mandatory inspection program for those like there is for vehicles when you sell them and that type of thing. So it's really just for on-demand inspections. So the registered motor vehicles or law enforcement or someone who's designated a peace officer under the Highway Traffic Act can order an inspection if they deem the vehicle to be unsafe or if they feel there's something mechanical. The main reason for doing that is that we've learned through doing motorcycle blitzes with the combined highway enforcement officers and law enforcement that we may have the technical expertise in our highway enforcement officers that law enforcement officials may not have, and so they really are limited on enforcement of when there's infractions related to motorcycles. For vehicles, if they think it's unsafe, they can already order an inspection. So this was really to put another tool in the toolbox for them to be able to send a light trailer or a vehicle for inspection if they deemed it to be unsafe or if there was something mechanically.
I think a lot of people thought there was going to be an inspection for all trailer surgery.
Yeah, that was actually...
Thank you. Most, as I said, the questions that I was going to ask, the honorable member there also asked. We did hear was that the access to the uninsured fund was removed from owners to combat uninsured vehicles. What happened there with the uninsured vehicle fund?
So Dave Heffernan, I'll ask my ADM to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that was a part of the insurance review, and it was removed as a part of that.
Okay.
Because I think uninsured drivers had access to that fund, and part of the changes was to remove their access to that fund in the case of...
Yeah, okay. Just for clarity, yeah. Thank you. I know there were steps... the department was mandated to take steps to consolidate services to increase efficiency and savings. Has this ever happened, or is it currently ongoing, or is it something that's no longer ongoing?
I know that's part of my current mandate letter that we're just getting started on.
Okay.
So we don't have anything,
Okay, so that's a new thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless anyone else wants to add anything.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I know there was another thing, too, to make. It was the Radiation Health and Safety Act. A review of the legislation that has been supposed to be undertaken. Is that currently coming up very soon, or is it still in the research phase?
So the consultations and all the work has been done, and we're in the process. I guess we're going through the cabinet process now, and I think that will be tabled in the very near future.
Okay. Another thing, too, is the new driver's licenses for the province. Where are they currently being manufactured in, being like done? Are they done in province or are they done out of province?
Alan Duty.
Alan Duty. The licenses are currently being produced in Burlington, Ontario. So we have been doing for at least the last 10 years, 15 years, this has been a joint initiative with the Atlantic provinces. So there's been a joint RFP to go out and find a company to provide driver's license services. The company that produces those licenses out of Burlington, Ontario, of course, were the successful bidder. There's no vendor in Atlantic Canada that actually produces those licenses. Central issuance of the license was first of all, it's resulted in cost savings. The joint RFP also results in savings because the card production cost is lower. But there's all kinds of security benefits in the card. It's a laser engraved card, and which is tamper proof. The card is not mailed out unless it passes through facial recognition, so that we know that the person in our database is the person who was in for service to get the card, and that they go through all those steps. So there's all kinds of added security measures. Your driver's license and your photo ID card is used to travel within the country, and also the credential on your card is we have reciprocity with. Not just within all the jurisdictions in Canada, but with other countries. And of course, the security of that card is very important to ensure that citizens of Newfoundland and Labrador, when they move from one jurisdiction to the other, that people trust and that their identification is valid and that their driving credentials are valid.
Funny to say, we actually had a gentleman reach out to our office today who actually received a card with the wrong photo on his card.
Really?
Yes. So I'm sure you'll hear from one of my colleague on that one.
So, sorry, just want to confirm, so wrong photo with...
It was the photo that was received in the card was not the gentleman's photo.
But all the data on the photo was? Oh, yeah, please let me know.
Yeah. Sorry. So, yeah, he asked me to ask that question. I'm sure you'll hear from them. All right. Under Section 3.1.01, we noticed professional services, there was a budget of $13,000 and nothing was spent. There's only $3,000 budgeted for the coming year. Was that a project or service that just never got completed or done?
Dave Heffernan? So the reason for the variance there of 13.8 was a result of a lower requirement for consulting services and training for our highway enforcement officers. And then the lower amount budgeted for this year, very similar, is that there's a decrease in the requirement for outside consulting services, and there's an Atlantic Province agreement where they get, all of us contribute to consulting services, just a lower requirement for consulting services.
Okay. Under professionals purchase services, it's pretty consistent there. Is that for the driver's license production and all those kind of things that outside services we receive now?
Yes, that's correct.
Also, a question to the new driver sticker initiative. Are they coming from outside the province too, or are they manufactured within the province?
Dave Heffernan. So we actually print those ourselves here.
Okay.
Yeah, we have, I think we insource, and then my ADM can correct me if I'm wrong, but we insourced that work a year ago, Ellen, was it, or 2 years ago?
Okay.
and we do the print of the actual registration and the stickers here.
Okay. Under allowances and assistance, what was the $10,000 used for?
Dave Heffernan, this was a settlement for a grievance.
Okay. Under grants and subsidies, what grants are issued from this department?
Bonnie Steele. The grant line here covers $10,000 for a safety NL for Lids for Kids program, and then the remainder of the balance is for a number of registration fees, membership fees for the Canadian Vehicle Safety Alliance, Canadian Council of Motor Transport Administrators, and International Registration Plan.
Okay. Revenue, federal, what would be the revenue federally that would this division would receive?
Dave Heffernan. So the revenue here from federal is revenue received from Transport Canada for the National Safety Code Program.
Okay. And provincial revenue would be all the fees and services for people's licensing and registration, all that?
It's actually for expedited service delivery for their driver's license.
Okay. 3.2.01. Support services there. What is the purchase services used from this department or division?
Dave Heffernan. So I think the majority of purchase services here are for secure cash pickup services.
Okay. And the $9,000 there for professional service, what would be the professional services used in this department? Our division, sorry.
Dave Heffernan, those are for per diem costs for our Building Accessibility Advisory Board and the Appeals Tribunal.
Okay, and that would be under the Building Accessibility Act review. Would that be fall under this?
Yes, yep.
Yeah. When were you, was that review completed there now?
Alan Duty, yes. The Act, the Building Accessibility Advisory Board have completed a review of the Act, and they're in the process of making recommendations to the Minister.
Okay. Is there any timeline on estimated completion of that?
So once the Minister receives the recommendations, then there'll be a decision made on when and what changes should be made to the Act.
Okay. Section 3.2.02, Regional Services. I got 20 seconds, so I'll not even, I won't even finish. I won't be able to complete that yet.
Okay. I will let you ask your question. Anyway, I'll continue because Jordan and myself are on the same page, I think. Section 3202. Just looking at the salary line there, there's over 121,000 that was spent less last year, but then we go up to 520,000 in this year's budget. Can you explain that?
Dave Heffernan. So the variance last year was a reflection of vacancies throughout the year, and the increase this year is a result of the 27th pay period, which accounts for 269,400 increase.
Okay.
And then 128,800 for regular salary plan adjustments.
Okay. Just curious, under supplies, what's included here? And there was a decrease to 17,000. So what's included in supplies?
Looks like to me the supplies here are just office supply costs. So the decrease there was a result of reduced office supply costs.
Okay.
And they tend to vary from year to year. So.
What's included in the revenue, provincial revenue there? What's included and explained large? There's a large variance here from what was actual and what is today.
So, Dave Heffernan, sorry. There was a large reprofiling of electrical permit revenue, which used to show up in this account, and it now shows up in the current revenue account. And there was also some impacts here as a result of Snowmageddon or Blizzard NL and COVID.
Okay.
Go to section 31301. Is there a full complement of OHS workers now throughout the province and including Labrador?
Sorry, Alan Duty. So the Occupational Health and Safety Division currently have 15 vacancies that they are actively recruiting. There are Occupational Health and Safety officers in Labrador, and there's also officers that fly in to Labrador. Normally, though, when we end up posting jobs on the island, often the officers that are in Labrador apply to for those competitions and leave. So we're always, it's always in perpetual motion.
Okay. If you could explain the salaries for me, over $555,000 last year spent in what was actually budgeted, and the whole line, could you just explain it?
Dave Heffernan. So the last year we had six occupational health and safety officers and three hygienists that were vacant throughout the year. So lower cost of $555,000 as a result of vacancies.
Okay. Under employee benefits, what explains the $131,000 increase in the actuals? What happened? Or decrease or increase? Yeah.
Sorry, did you say 100 and something?
No, it's actually it's 13,000, isn't it?
Yep. Oh, the increase, yes. So there was an increase there for hires workers comp charges.
Okay. Okay. Under supplies, why is there a steady decline? Since there was a decline there in what the budget last year, then what was spent this year, and then there's a decline this year.
Dave Heffernan. So there was a lower than anticipated subscription cost for Canadian Centre for Occupational Health and Safety, or their inquiry services, sorry. And then this year we did a right sizing just to reflect reduced subscription costs related to inquiry hearings.
Okay. In professional services, again, there's a steady decline there. What's included here, too?
Dave Heffernan. So there was a rate sizing of expenditures here as well, and it should have been charged into purchase services, and same thing for the new year. There's an increase there of $50,000, which reflects rate sizing of the expenditures and moving them over from purchase services.
Okay. So would that explain the next slide? Of the increase in the, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and revenue, provincial revenue. Is this all related to recouping from workers' comp? Or workplace NL, I'm sorry. It is?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay. Section 3401. How many people are currently receiving assistance through this program?
There are currently 43 participants. 43 beneficiaries, sorry.
Page, okay. Go to section 3402. Just wondering on the grants and subsidies, what's included, and can you explain the $7,000 increase in actuals?
So the $7,000 increase reflects a $10,000 payout that we had of a grant related to a court-ordered penalty, which was offset by a $3,000 reduction in regular assistance requirements. And these things are used for things like promoting occupational health and safety in the industry, supporting meetings in the industry. I think there was an initiative with the St. John's Regional Fire Department to do an occupational health and safety training manual as well.
Okay. Under the revenue, provincial, what's included?
Bonnie Steele. The revenue here are the expenditures recoverable from Workplace NL. And the difference is just a timing difference from the receipt of the funding that was there from one year to the next, the related to the fourth quarter of 18-19.
Okay. All right, that's it for me.
Mr. Brown?
One question there. With Occupational Health and Safety Office in Labrador West, I know a lot of businesses and stuff complain to me that the clerk that works in that office is only from, I think, 9 to 12, and she don't work in the afternoons. And I get a lot of businesses and stuff calling me complaining that they can't reach out to that office during those after times. I was wondering if there's any consideration for improvements to that office when it comes to hours of operation.
Alan Duty. So, first, if any business needs any assistance, there's a 1-800 number and a provincial number they can phone to have that assistance provided. With regards to that employee only working partial days, I'll actually have to investigate. I wasn't aware that that was actually ongoing, so I'm not sure what the reason for that is. There's a full-time position there, so I'm not aware that they're only.
Yeah, there's an individual there, and it seems that after 1 o'clock, that individual is not there.
No. So if it's the officer,
it's not the officer. No, it's a clerk.
I'll get back to you on that.
Perfect. Thank you, and I appreciate that. I'm done there, Chair. Madam Chair.
Yeah, okay. Workplace Health and Safety Compensation Review Division was removed from this department. Is there a reason for that?
Sarah Studley, I'm not aware of the reason. I believe that was, you know, the prerogative of the Premier's office when they were reorganizing the departments.
Okay, thank you. That's it for me.
Thank you. We'll just wait a few seconds now for the clerk to get back. He's distributing the minutes from the last meeting. You're done? Thank you. Okay, we'll call the vote. Shall 3.1.01 to 3.4.02 inclusive carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? The motion has been carried. The total? Shall the total carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? The motion has been carried. Shall I report the estimates of Digital Government and Service NL be carried without amendment? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? The motion has been carried. We do have some minutes that the clerk has just distributed around, so I'm just looking to have a motion that those minutes be accepted. Mr. Bennett? Minister, would you like final remarks?
I just want to say thank you to the department and thank you to the committee members and the staff for joining us this evening, and I won't make this any longer. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Parsons, would you like...
Yes, I'd just like to thank the staff for your answers tonight. Very informative. Like I always say about estimates, it's a great time to come and learn a lot about the departments. And I'd like to thank you for all the work that you've been doing. And I'd like to thank the ministers behind me for having their patience to listen to us tonight, because I know they were listening very attentively to all the questions that were asked. So I hope they learned a little bit tonight, too. And I'd like to thank our staff members that come out and do a great bit of work to get us prepared for this. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Chair.
Mr. Brown?
Yeah, thank you. I just want to thank the staff. It's wonderful to see you there. I know I talk to some of them on the phone and stuff pretty frequently, especially Alan there. And I know they're all in good hands. There's a nice Labradorian in the back there, so I know they're all in good hands over there. But I want to thank you all for coming out. It's appreciated. And I know you guys are, you know, it's after hours, and you guys are just trying to keep us informed and in line. And like I said, I thank my fellow members here of the committee. I know they're taking notes. They're probably all ready for the quiz, right? After, right? Anyway, they're all good. Anyway, thank you, everyone. And thank you, Madam Chair, for leading us through this.
Thank you so much. Can I now have a motion to adjourn? Mr. Andrew Persons. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.